Get ready, church. We get to look into the face of Jesus today. I can't think of anything better than gathering together and looking at and learning from Jesus. See, when Kelly and Jake reached out and asked if I wanted to be a part of the summer series again, it was really the series that intrigued me. I love your church family. I love getting to be here with you, but I really love Jesus. And this series that you've been in, the 9 faces of Jesus, getting to look at the different aspects of who he is, how Jesus is more than one thing, and what that means for us, and how we can relate to that, and who we are because of that, how no matter who we are, no matter what we're like, no matter how we're wired, that we get to be like Jesus. Wow. So you could follow him for 100 years and never lose interest in him, and still be learning more about who he is, and still be learning more about what that means for who we are. I've been following Jesus for a while, for over 30 years. I've been learning about him for my whole life. I was very fortunate to grow up with parents who loved Jesus and followed him, and that impacted our whole family. And it was more than just Sunday morning for us. It was throughout everything that we did. And I found proof of this recently. Actually, my mom is a very sentimental mom, which I know you could probably make the argument that all moms are like that. My mom is definitely, like, she keeps anything that she associates memories to, especially with her kids. And she has this cassette that she kept that is a recording of, it's an audio recording of myself and my brother when I was 2 and my brother was 3. My older brother and I are only 13 months apart. I was a surprise baby. I think only God was planning for me to come into the picture, which is still sometimes true today. But we have this recording, and on it, I'm 2, he's 3, and we're walking through the Christmas story. And we're walking through, we're talking together about how, like, the angel came to Mary and the shepherds, and Jesus was a little baby, and it's the cutest thing. I didn't have access to the actual recording to bring it and play it for you, but we do have a picture that I can show you of when I was 2 and my brother was 3, so you can see how cute and adorable we were. And it struck me when I listened to this recording, and I was thinking about how we were that young, that we were so fortunate that we got to learn about Jesus and who he is at this really young age, and what a blessing that was. But also, as I looked at this picture, I was struck by another thing, and I realized, wow, that's another thing I've been doing my whole life. You may not be able to tell this, but my brother and I are in a fort that we built in this picture. So this might look random to you, but it was very strategic. This basket of toys and the very carefully placed sneakers and the chair and the little box of cereals there, it was a fort that we had built. And I can remember doing this as a little preschooler. We would come down really early in the morning before our parents were even up. We'd go into the kitchen and we'd build this fort in the corner because we felt safe and protected in there. Like nothing could get to us. We were in our fort. We were safe in there. And I was struck by this. I'm like, wow, I haven't stopped doing that. I still do that. We all still do that. We think the world's scary and I want to protect myself from being hurt, so I'm going to build up this wall, this protection, this fort that I can stay inside and be safe. It'll keep me or anyone that I love from getting hurt. And the truth is, the stuff that we put, it doesn't protect us any more than this stuff did. But we still think, I'm going to keep myself safe by building up this wall of not getting too close to people, of not letting anyone see what's really going on with me, of not being vulnerable with anyone, because it keeps me safe. Because the world's scary, right? You want to create a barrier that will protect you. In fact, if I think about it, when I look around at our world and I think, what's the physical stance that represents the way a lot of people are interacting right now in our country, all around the world? It's like the fists up stance. I've never boxed a day in my life. I have no idea if I'm doing this right. But the stance of a boxer, right? That's maybe not physically, but in our mind, this is our interaction with people a lot of the time. I'm on guard against you. And if I perceive you as a threat to me, I'll throw the first punch too. Like, I'll take you out before you can take me out. I'm going to protect myself and I'm going to protect the people that I care about and that I love. But as we look into the face of Jesus this morning, and we look at who he is and what he's done for us and what that means for us, it starts with us realizing that we can lower our arms and we can lower our defenses and we can relax our hands and take a deep breath because he's fighting for us. We don't have to fight for our protection, for our safety, for our security anymore, because he has that all covered. He's fighting for us, and he's already won for us. We have victory in him. So it starts just with that, with knowing that we can actually be vulnerable. That's okay. That we don't have to go out into the world ready to take on anyone that we perceive as a threat or who could harm us, because Jesus has our back and he's fighting for us. Now, if you're at all like me, you may like fighting. Some of us out there, God wired us where we just actually enjoy conflict. He was wise and he only sprinkled the population. There's not too many of us like that. But some of us, we were like, I feel like I was created for fighting. I actually enjoy it. I find conflict kind of fun. So I have good news if that is you. You don't have to fight for your protection and for your safety and for your comfort, but there is a fight going on that Jesus is inviting you into. See, Jesus is inviting you to come fight for people because that's what he does. And there's a whole battle going on that he's like, you know what? I did create you for this fight. You don't have to fight for yourself and your safety and comfort, but I have created you to fight for people. All of us, in our own unique way, we've been created to fight for people because Jesus does that. He fights for people. I relate to him so much in this aspect of who he is, of Jesus as my captain, leading me into the fight. I love this aspect of him. I appreciate so much that Jesus not only is kind and gentle and compassionate and tender with us, because he is, he's all of those things, but that's not all he is. He's also fierce and passionate and a warrior and challenging and intense and sometimes too much for people. That's also Jesus. That changes how I interact with him on a daily basis. I don't just come to him for comfort. I come to him for marching orders because he's a fighter. I love that about him. Now, I was praying for this morning and praying through just being here with you in this aspect of Jesus. And I was so excited to share that this is also who he is. And I was praying and I was having a conversation with Jesus. Like, I would love it if you could show me an example that really illustrates that. Like, it's so awesome that we have access to these Bibles where we can go and learn who you are and look at your character. Could you show me, could you just kind of shine a light on a story or an example that shows that you were intense and that you went and rescued people and you fight for people and you weren't afraid to challenge things when you needed to? Like, give me an example of that. To which I felt like Jesus said, how about that time that I went and rescued those two demon-possessed men and cast out the demons into a herd of pigs? How about that time? To which my response was, can we pick a different one? Like, that story, that's almost too intense for me. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening there. And I challenged him on it. I kind of wrestled with him a little bit. I even tried to suggest a different one. I'm like, hey, could we maybe do, like, when you calm the storm instead? That's a great story. I love that one. And has Jesus ever played a joke on you? He was like, all right, go read it. So I went to Matthew 8. Where Jesus calms the storm. If you've ever heard this story before, Jesus was getting into a boat with his disciples and they were crossing a lake and a huge storm came up and Jesus had total command over it and he told the storm to calm down and go away. Have you ever asked yourself or wondered where he was going when they were crossing the lake? He was going to go rescue two demon-possessed men. That's where he was going when he calmed the storm. So that's immediately what follows. So don't fight with Jesus because he always wins. So we're going to be reading in Matthew 8, and if you have a Bible, you can pull that right out. If you have a Bible app, you can pull it up from there. It's also going to be up on the screens here. We're going to read in Matthew 8, starting in verse 28. So what's happening here is that Jesus has just crossed over that lake. He left where he had been ministering to people. He's with his disciples. They cross the lake. In the meantime, they calm the storm. And then this is where our story picks up. When he arrived at the other side in the region of the Gadarenes, two demon-possessed men coming from the tombs met him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. What do you want with us, Son of God? They shouted. Have you come here to torture us before the appointed time? Some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. The demons begged Jesus, if you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs. He said to them, go. So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. Those tending the pigs ran off, went into the town, and reported all of this, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they pleaded with him to leave their region. Wow. There's a lot of things happening here. So Jesus has left his region and he's gone to the region of the Gadarenes. Now this is already unusual because most of Jesus' ministry when he was walking around on earth was in Israel. It was within the Israel area, their towns, and he's crossing this lake and going to the Gadarenes, which is a Gentile area. So he's leaving and going to a completely different area. The Gadarenes were the Gentiles, the non-Jewish, not the Israelites. They're going for a totally different place, which you could also have picked up on that because of the fact they had pigs there. So if you know anything about Israelites or Jewish people, they didn't eat pigs. They were unclean animals, so they didn't have herds of pigs in Israel. So Jesus is leaving his usual area, going somewhere completely separate and different to go rescue these men. So he crosses the lake, he goes to the Gadarenes, and he encounters these two men who've been harassed and attacked and their lives destroyed by these demons. Now, here's what you need to know about demons. They're real. They're not made up. They're not fictional. They're not people. They're also not the way Netflix portrays them. They're spiritual beings who put themselves in opposition to God. So they are against him and against his plans, which means that they're often against people because God loves people. We're created in his image. They also have limited power and authority. So they had enough power that they could really make life awful for these men. That's evident. These men would have been outcast. They were abandoned from their towns and their families. They said they were very violent and they had an awful, awful life. So they had power to do that and really mess with their lives. The second Jesus comes on the scene, the demons no longer have any power and authority in this situation. The one that's awe-inspiring and all-powerful in this story is Jesus. That's clear. They know that immediately. They even know who he is. They call him Son of God right away. They know that whatever he says is what goes. And they even beg with him, listen, we know you have authority. You can do whatever you want with us. Please don't torture us. If you're going to send us away, please send us to these pigs. So Jesus says, all right, go. With one word, he commands this situation. He says, go. Sends him to the herd of pigs. Whole herd of pigs rushes off down the hillside and dies in the water. Now's where we start getting to the heart of this story. We start getting closer to it. Because when the pigs die, you start seeing kind of the clash of two value systems that are going on in this story. See, here's what you need to know about the pigs. It wasn't like the townspeople had one or two pigs and they were trying out organic farming in their backyard. This was a huge herd of pigs. This was a lot of money. This was their livelihood. This is how this town survived and lived. And Jesus just wiped it out. It was like him wiping out their savings and their jobs. So they are upset with this. And it becomes clear because of their response to this that what they had valued was the comfort and the security and the financial possession they had from this herd of pigs. They are not happy that they've lost this. They were content to let the status quo go with these two men. They knew they were there. It said people avoided them. They were leaving them there. They get upset when their herd of pigs is lost. Jesus, on the other hand, he valued the people. So he comes into this situation and he just upsets the whole dynamic because he valued those men. He went to rescue those men. So you can see that he was not afraid to challenge the way things were there, the status quo as it was, even the value system of these people in order to rescue those men. That's what he was there for. He was there for them. This upset people, and they asked him to leave. And the amazing thing here, this is we really come to the heart of who Jesus is and this aspect of him as a fighter. He does. They say, hey, you know what? We're scared of you. We don't want you here. Please, please just leave. He actually does. It says later on in the next verse that he gets back in his boat and he goes back across the lake and he leaves. Because here's the truth about Jesus. Jesus fights for people, not against them and not with them. He uses his power and his authority and his command for people. He rescues them. He's not there to pick fights with them or demolish them. He could, and he doesn't. It's like, I was here to rescue these men, and that's happened. I don't need to set myself in opposition or tear you down. I'm here for people. I'm here to fight for people, and that's how he uses his power. I love this about Jesus. That's who he is. He fights for people, and as he is, so are we. We get to fight for people. Jesus, as our captain, is saying, we have a fight that you are getting called to fight for people, not against them, not to tear them down, but to fight for people. This is who he is. So if we're going to fight for people, remember, we're being vulnerable and real with each other. So I think some of us, when we hear that, we're like, you know what? I'm good with Jesus fighting for me. I'm happy with him fighting for people. Maybe I don't want to. Some of you are like, I just don't feel like much of a fighter. I don't really have the fight in me in that way. Or some of you are like, oh, I like fighting, but I like picking what I fight for. I want to fight for myself. Or I like being angry. I like fighting, but I don't know about fighting for Jesus. I don't know what he's calling me to fight for. Maybe I don't have that kind of fight in me. Here's the truth, though. If you want to fight for people, you have to get angry. You have to get angry about what Jesus gets angry about. That's how we fight for people. See, Jesus gets perfectly angry in the right situations. Now, I have a very close friendship with anger. We go way back. We're childhood friends, and I spent years figuring out this relationship I have with anger and what it looks like and how to use it and when not to be. When I was 21, I read a book that really helped me understand this aspect of God and what it means when God gets angry and that he actually has anger about things. It was a book that was written about a Christian response to HIV and AIDS, specifically in Africa. And the heart of this book, the whole concept of this book, was that clearly throughout Scripture, you see that God has a heart and care for orphans and widows and strangers in the land. And that not only does he care for them, he has a response when anything comes that oppresses or tears down or is unjust to these people that he loves. And the book was called When God Stood Up. And I never forgot that aspect, that he gets angry about injustice, because anger is the right response to injustice. Anger is the right response when something has gone wrong, when a person is treated horribly, when a person is not treated as though they have value and are created in God's image. Anger is the right response to that. And I know that for some of you, you're like, I don't want to be mad at people. I don't want to be mad at someone. I don't want to walk around angry at people. Okay. Don't be angry at people, but you should be angry for people. You need to get angry about the things that makes Jesus angry. You can get angry for people and on their behalf because he does. See, anger is fuel. It is. If you want to fight for people, you've got to have the fuel, and anger fuels that. It's a lot like gasoline. Right, like you pour gasoline in your car and it can go for miles. You can drive that thing all over. You don't want to take gasoline and pour it around your house. That'll burn you and your family down. So Paul says as well in Ephesians 4, he talks about how in your anger do not sin. He's not saying don't get angry. He's saying be careful of how you use that. Get angry about the things God gets angry at. You don't use anger at people. You don't throw it at them. You're not going to throw gasoline at people. You're going to use it as fuel. And here's the amazing thing about getting angry. When we get angry and use that as fuel to fight for people, what it looks like is love. What it shows up as is love. It's not like we're saying you walk around like a mad, bitter, angry person all the time. No, when you use anger as fuel to fight for people, it shows up as courageous, brave, extraordinary love. See, anger at the way people were treated on the streets of India is what fueled Mother Teresa. And anger at the way people in our country were treated is what fueled Martin Luther King Jr. and thousands of other people who said, I'm going to stand up because I'm angry. that people would be treated this way. It's not okay. And it's fuel for me to go fight for people. So if you want to fight for people because Jesus does, you need to get angry. So once you get angry and you're going to go fight for people, the next thing, you have to fight like you've already won. When we're going to go fight for people, you've got to fight like you've already won. And the reason this matters, the reason we need to remember this, is because fighting for people is hard. It's not easy. Jesus will lead you straight into a challenge. This is not an easy thing to do. Fighting for people led Jesus through persecution and pain and suffering and death on the cross. That's what it led him to. And it didn't end there. Because he defeated death, because he brought us victory, we can fight like we've already won, even when it feels like that's a loss. Even when it feels like I lost that person, I lost that battle. When you remember that he's already won for us, it changes the way you fight. It changes how long you can fight. See, what he did on the cross means that all of his promises are fulfilled to us. It means that everything he promised, like I'm never going to leave you or forsake you, that's all fulfilled. Whether you feel like it is or not, he fulfilled that, what he did on the cross. So he's a captain that is there with us in the fight. He never leaves us. He's won victory for us, and we can stand on that, and we can have confidence in that. Some of you need to get angry and go fight to win about situations that you know God is already stirring in your heart. Some of you need to just get angry about the fact that there are hundreds of kids, thousands of them right here in our own cities and states that are in foster care, that do not have a safe home, that do not have a safe family. Some of you need to get so angry that you're going to stand up and go fight for them. Some of you need to get angry about the mental health challenges that people are battling alone, who feel like I'm alone. I don't have anyone walking with me in this. I don't have resources. Some of you need to get angry about that and stand up and do something. God will stir what that is in you. And you need to feel like it's okay for me to go ahead and get angry. And when I do and I go fight for people, I'm going to go fight like I've already won, even if it's hard, even if it's challenging, even if it sometimes feels like dying. I'm going to get angry and I'm going to go fight for people because that's what Jesus does. That's what he did for me. As we start kind of circling up and wrapping up, looking into the face of Jesus, I'm going to tell you my experience of that this summer. This summer, I was at summer camp for our kids and our middle school students. In my role at Manchester Christian Church, I was the camp director. Now, I love summer camp. I love it. I love being outside with them, the games that we play, the connections that you have with these students. There's kids that decide to get baptized at it, that make lifelong friendships at it. I love summer camp. If I'm being vulnerable and real with you, particularly our middle school camp this summer was really hard for me. It was rough. It felt like a battle. In fact, in our morning devotions with our camp leaders each morning, we were reading through the armor of God because we were so aware that this is a battle that we are in for these kids. And it was hard. And there was one night in particular, and it was about midnight at this point. And we'd had an incident with our middle schoolers that just kind of blew up, and dealing with that and trying to keep the drama with middle schoolers from spreading all over and just impacting the whole camp. So we're dealing with all this, and there were kids that needed some meds situation going on. Like, it was just stuff. And our leaders were exhausted. So it gets to be about midnight at this point. We finally got everything sort of situated and it's handled, and kids are back in their cabins. The leaders are back in their cabins. I'm walking back from the nurse's station back to the cabin that I was sleeping in across the field, and I stopped. I'm outside in the dark in this field, and I just look at all these cabins. And these cabins are full of students that I love, and I know a lot of their stories. I know these kids. Some of them, I've been praying for them for years. And I look at them like, I know some of them have had abuse in their past. Some of them have had parents who abandoned them and walked out on them. Some of them have really hard situations going on with bullying at school. Some of them, they're really wrestling through, does God really love me? Do I have worth in that? And I looked at these kids and I had this moment where I just got so angry that this enemy who's put himself in opposition to God would would mess with them, would dare to come near them and spread lies to them. And I stood there in this field and I got so angry about it. I'm telling you, if I had had a sword in my hand, I would have done like a Spartan-like spirit into the field in the middle there, because I just got so angry. And this is what I said as I stood there. And I looked at those cabins full of my kids and my students. And I stood in that field and I said, you know what, Satan? F you and all of your little minions too. You lost. We won. We're on the side that won. So you need to get out of here, because I'm standing here to take back ground from you. And I know that you can do damage with your death throes, but in the end, you lost. And you need to get out. Because Jesus sent me here to fight for these kids and these students, so you better get out of my way. And I'm not saying that in arrogance, because I know that you could kill me. You could take out every last one of us here, but you can't kill Jesus. And he already proved that. And it's his victory that I'm standing on, and it's his confidence that I have. So you better leave and get out of here. Because these kids, every single one of the people here, belong to Jesus. So we're going to fight for them. Church, there is nothing on earth more powerful than Jesus' followers when we get angry and go fight for people. That's what he's sending us to do. He's saying you can lower your defenses and you can be vulnerable because I've already won for you and I'm fighting for you. And now there's a fight going on that you can be a part of. And you can come fight for people, because there's people all over the world that need you to go fight for them. And Jesus is inviting you into that. And for us, that means sometimes we need to get angry. And we need to walk out in the confidence that we have in who Jesus is. And we need to go fight for people, because that's what Jesus does. Let me pray for you. Lord, I come before you as we're gathered here, and most of all, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for what you did on the cross. I thank you that you fought for us, that you never gave up on us, that you died on the cross for us and defeated death. Thank you for what that means in our lives and the way that changes our interaction with each other and our interaction with you. Lord, I pray over each person who's gathered here in this room, each person who's listening and watching. Lord, you've called us to go fight for people. So I just ask that you would show us clearly what it is that you get angry about, and that we would not only see that, but we would get angry too. That we would remember that we have won. That you have won victory, and we can stand on that and have confidence in you. We thank you for who you are, for the way that you love us, and that we get to love people in that same way. We pray all of this in your awesome and your powerful and your holy name. Amen.